Mmm, I love this new caramel macchiato from Tim Hortons.
Me too. Did you know that it's made with fresh ground espresso beans?
Cool. Did you know that they hand layer the smooth espresso on top of freshly steamed milk?
Did you know that I love the sweet caramel?
Oh yeah. Did you know we're holding up the drive-thru?
Oops.
Stop by Tim Hortons today for a new handcrafted caramel macchiato. Available hot or iced. Great quality at a great value. It's all good at Tim Hortons. At participating Tim Hortons restaurants.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for taking time out of your busy day to join us. We are so grateful to have you listening to our show today. Thank you.
Absolutely. And just a little bit of an announcement before we head on in with our guest. I have been having what I'm calling a Keep Talking Mental Health Week, which is my hashtag, Keep Talking MH. And I've been asking that people pose for a selfie with a creatively made sign that says hashtag keep talking mental health.
Keep talking MH.
Keep talking MH, correct. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Got your back, babe.
Thanks, honey. We have gotten some great responses. I've got this lovely lady who is in Greece right now and who actually held up the sign at the Parthenon the other day,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of surreal.
Kind of surreal, yeah.
We're having a great time with it. So today and tomorrow are the last 2 days. So get your signs in. If you're camera shy and you don't want to take a picture of yourself with the sign, just take a picture of the sign. I'll allow that.
Yeah.
And
hold it up over your face or something. It'd be okay.
Yep. And make sure you send it to my Twitter account, my Facebook account, something along those lines. And my Twitter is at Becca Lombardo, BekaLombardo.
Yep.
So just get those signs into us quickly. We've only got a couple days left. And
there are prizes.
Yes. There are 3 prize packs. One is for the most creative sign. One is for the most creative place to hold up a sign. And the other is kind of a runner-up on the creativity because I was suggesting that maybe you try to get someone famous involved, and that's kind of difficult, I know, for some people to approach someone that's famous and say, hey, will you do this kind of dumb thing for me? So,
yeah. But still worthy, you know.
I've approached a couple, and I got a couple, but unfortunately, I don't win the prizes. So, so if you can get a famous person to do it, to hold up the sign, that would be fantastic. Just have them snap a selfie of themselves. But anyway, that's the personal stuff.
Yep.
Today, we are very happy to have a fantastic mental health advocate on the show that also happens to be very, very funny. So this is going to be a fun show. Erez Shek.
Yes. Hello.
Yes. Hello. is here to talk stigma.
Wait
and
for it.
And hopefully educate. First, I get my tongue twisted on his name, and then you interrupt me on the rest of it.
I'm sorry.
Well, I seriously, come on, man.
It's what I do. You know, I'm the buffoon.
Yes,
I'm good at it.
Embrace it, Joe. I'm quite a buffoon myself, so I embrace it and I own it.
Oh, great. Well, we're happy to have you on the show, Erez. Thank you so much for being with us and taking time today and. Where in the country are you, just out of curiosity?
I am actually in the Bay Area in Northern California.
Okay, so this is good and early for you then. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it's early, but it's so weird. Like I wake up quite early as is, but
okay.
It was still like that. It was still that kind of like, oh, but I'm going to have to be, like, you know, truly awake.
Yeah. I still have to do stuff.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for getting up so early to be with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you. And I just want to, like, thank both of you guys with the hashtag KeepTalkingMH. It was, I think it was such a wonderful thing when I saw it on Twitter. And it's brought so many voices together, and it's reached out so far. And it really does promote us kind of joining as a community and kind of reaching out beyond our community to keep talking mental health, because it's so important. So I just wanted to say thank you to you guys for creating that hashtag.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that.
Thanks a lot. That means a lot to hear that. You know, it is a great community on Twitter. I gotta say, you know, all the great people that we've connected with through Twitter, just in the mental
and
health community,
our show.
And whatnot, and you know, it's how we met you, and you know, just a whole bunch of great people. And you know, to our listeners that aren't aware of it, you know, you can go through, you know, the hashtag Keep Talking MH and come across a lot of great people that are very supportive, that are in the same boat as you, that have been through the same things you've been through. You know, if you need somebody to talk to, you know, throw a stone and you're going to hit somebody that is willing to talk and, you know, willing to, you know, help you through things. And if you're willing to help others through things too, then that's, you know, it just makes our community better and stronger.
And if you don't know how to do that, there's a search box up in the top right corner, and you can type in the hashtag KeepTalkingMH and hit the search, and it'll bring up all of the tweets that have been produced using that hashtag, and you can scroll through them and you can talk to people and join in the conversation. And if you use that hashtag in your tweet, it's going to get retweeted by me, because I 2 to 3 times a day go through my entire hashtag Keep Talking Mental Health feed and like and retweet everything. So,
and I usually end up doing the same thing too.
Yeah, so he'll do it too. So it'll.
You're covered. Like, to be honest, like, I think maybe like a year, 2 years ago, I was such like a, like, I would make fun of people using hashtags, because I would be like, I don't get what the point is. Like, are you just putting a hashtag in front of stuff? So like, and this was like before I really was on Twitter. I was like kind of a late comer onto Twitter. And so I would be like on Facebook making fun of people doing hashtags, and like cut to a year later, and I'm like, okay, I'm one of those people now. But it's such a great tool if you're looking, like, if you're looking for people with similar interests or similar issues, or similar wants to do things in the world. It's such a great tool to just look up stuff, and you'll start finding all these wonderful like resources and videos and blogs, and I embrace the hashtag.
Yeah, you know, I'm in the same boat as you. I was late to the party on Twitter, and I didn't really get it. Beck's been doing it.
He still doesn't entirely get it.
I'm still not.
I made fun of it hardcore. I made fun of it. Like, I mocked it. I was like, Facebook forever.
No,
MySpace.
Like, yeah.
Oh my God, MySpace. I remember. Do you remember Friendster?
What was it?
Do you remember Friendster? I think it was called Friendster. This was like back when I was in high school, and like Friendster was the thing, and then it was MySpace, and then both of them kind of became irrelevant.
No, that stuff didn't exist when we were in high school. So.
Yeah, we're a little older than you. Yeah. No, when we were in high school, we were grateful to have a pager. So that should shed some light.
Yeah, and then the pagers got advanced. Remember when they had the screens where somebody could tell an operator a message?
That's right.
And it would come across on the screen.
Yeah, you'd be sitting there in math class and something comes across the screen. You suck, jackass. You know, and you're like, oh, I don't know who 555-8374 is, but they think I'm a jackass. Oh,
you mean
man.
Back in the day when we had to actually know phone numbers?
Yeah.
And not just, like, the name that pops up?
That's right. Yeah.
Or when, like, like numbers didn't even pop up. You're just like, I'm picking up the phone that's attached to the wall in my house, and I have no idea who's calling.
Yes, sir. It was a crapshoot. Could be anybody.
Those were the good old days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we got some questions for you that we're going to jump into.
Yeah, we got to reel it back in and get back to questions. Do you have any questions for us before we dive in here?
Yes. What is the meaning of life?
It sucks.
No. meaning of life is mango banana smoothies. That's the meaning of life.
That is correct. That is correct. That is correct. I just fact checked that, and that is correct. Yes.
Yep. So okay. Cool. All right, we got that.
Good job. Right.
Thank you.
Let's take a little bit of a serious turn here, and ask you how old you were when you first started showing symptoms of depression.
I have bipolar disorder, and I always struggled with. It was high school where depression really showed up. I actually can trace back to my first manic episode, which I remember more vividly, but not completely vividly, to my freshman year in high school. I, at the time, had just thought I had too much caffeine, but I kind of went to this place where, like, I was like, I don't think most people, kind of try to get to, like, try to commit suicide when they've had too much caffeine. Looking back, I'm kind of like, maybe it wasn't the, like, you know, the Coca-Cola. maybe. You know, but I did struggle. I did get misdiagnosed with depression and anxiety in high school. But it wasn't until during my junior year in college that I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Hmm. Okay.
That's a pretty big gap between the diagnoses.
Well, all
of them can get misdiagnosed quite easily and quite often. And it was kind of one of those, that was a long gap. but initially when I went to the psychologist, it was actually to be tested for I was failing out of college, and it was to be tested for learning disabilities. And, you know, I sat with a psychologist for about, I think, 2 or 3 days, and just doing testing over testing over testing, which, I mean, was exhausting. And his diagnosis came back with bipolar 2 disorder.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. When you were going through all that, were you getting a lot of support from family or friends or what have you?
My family was extremely supportive. My parents were the ones that wanted me to get tested. And I think in many ways it was kind of one of those things where it's like, we have an answer to something right now. So in that respect, I was very lucky that it was like, okay, so all this crap that's been going on for years. There's a reason for it. In that way, I was extremely supported. I've always been a very open person. So when I was diagnosed with bipolar, it wasn't something I decided to hide from any of my friends. I've always been someone that I've needed to laugh at my situation. Because I feel if I'm able to laugh at my situation, I don't necessarily sit in the suckiness of my situation. And I don't want to sit in the suckiness of my situation. So the humor helps me with that. But oftentimes if we go too far, we don't necessarily really address the things. And sometimes from that humor, we can often stigmatize ourselves. And be giving wrong and incorrect information out there because we're kind of like, I'm going to make fun of my bipolar, but I'm not going to really know what I'm joking about. And, you know, through the years, that's kind of changed because I've seen how, what that can do, but I've also kind of seen what kind of getting direct information from textbooks can do to people as well. Because, you know, if you take everything you read in a book about depression or bipolar disorder and you're like, well, this is everything that it is, and you attach that to people, then you're literally calling them a textbook definition of a diagnosis versus trying to figure out how they are with their mental illness. I'm sorry, I just totally went on a tangent.
That's okay. No problem.
No, no, it's cool. You know,
we prefer to have someone that talks more than someone that just answers with grunts.
Depression.
Well, now that you said that, I'm just going to grunt through the rest of the episode.
Smoothies, good.
Do you still That's enough of the smoothies, honey.
They were really good.
Do you still receive the same type of treatment today?
Excuse me?
Do you still receive the same type of treatment today as you did back then?
Well, yes and no. Because, I mean, with bipolar, it's, I mean, you have to find a balance with your medication. If you choose to, you know, go the medication route, which I suggest. But I also, I believe in talk therapy as well to kind of continue pushing me as well, because I believe that we still need to be pushed in a healthy direction and talk things out. But with bipolar disorder, like I've come to the realization that for me, I'm not going to be on the same cocktail of medication my whole life. It's changed multiple times throughout my diagnosis. It's always needing adjustment. It needs management because, I mean, the kind of way it's been explained to me and the kind of way I've accepted it is that, you know, I have a chemical imbalance, and imbalances don't balance out forever. They continue to kind of imbalance, and there are brain chemicals, and as we grow, our brain chemistry shifts and changes. So with that, I'm aware that, like, my medication will constantly need to be monitored and managed. So, I mean, I have a psychotherapist who he does my medication and my talk therapy once a week, because I find it's a good way to have someone monitor me without, like, you know, monitoring me, like, you know, watching me. Because, you know, but like oftentimes he might be able to see something I'm not able to admit to myself yet. If I'm in a state of depression, or if I'm in an episode of depression or an episode of mania, he might be able to see the signs before I do, because he knows me. He's a psychiatrist. He can often see things that we don't see within ourselves. So yeah, for me, I do go to a psychiatrist, therapist once a week, and you know, I have to get my blood tested once a month to check my levels in my medication, and also, you know, how the medication affects other parts of my physical health as well.
Right. Well, that's good that you're so on top of it, though. You know, I mean, you know, the other thing too is, you know, the cocktail does change.
Yeah.
You know, Beck and I, next week we will have been together 16 years, and I can't count the number of times over the years that we've had to adjust her meds. You know, add this, take that away, increase how much of this.
And that's not even my whole depression.
No, that's
life.
Just
that's just a small portion of it.
Yeah, it's just one little bit of it, you know. And, you know, management is key. You know, that's part of doing the work. You know, that's a mantra of ours, is that you have to do the work.
Exactly.
And, you know, for doing the work, you know, you have to communicate to your doctor, you have to communicate to your therapist if you're, you know, going to therapy and whatnot, and tell them what's working for you and what isn't. And that's awesome that you're on it, you know. Good
well,
on
I mean,
you know.
Oh, thank you very much. I kind of just, like, the way I look at it is like, I sometimes like go back and forth between this thinking where it's like, oh my God, there is so much to think about and deal with when you're living with a mental illness, you know, whatever, whatever, illness it is, because you're, mm-hmm. you're thinking about like how to, you know, how to live number one, or like, you know, your medications. And then you have to think about your side effects of your medication, and you have to think about like what your self-care is. And for me, part of all that is like, well, yeah, it sucks to have to like take on all that. And it's a huge responsibility. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a lot of pressure because we're talking about our lives here, you know?
Exactly.
But like, I think just because we have all those things to deal with, it doesn't mean that we don't need to be, like pushing ourselves as well. You know, it's like, I feel like I still need to focus on like my own growth and my own strengths as well. Besides taking on all those things. So there is a lot on our plate. And it's, you know, it's not all, you know, roses and candy. I don't know what that
puppies and rainbows. Yeah.
Thank you. That's what I was like, I can't think of the analogy. I feel like, I'm sorry, what?
No, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah. I like when people do that. And but I also like when people disagree with me, because I think like that kind of resistance is good, you know?
No, it's not.
But I don't know, I feel like oftentimes we kind of just sit in the suckiness of our situation. And then we're also still often saying, you know, we should be kind of treated like everyone else, and all these things should kind of be, you know, like get, you know, we're getting rid of stigma and all these things. But if we're kind of sitting in the suckiness of our situation, are we really kind of pushing the limits with saying, you know, we don't want that discrimination, and we don't want that stigma against us as victims or weak, when we end up kind of sitting in that sometimes. So it's become really important for me to kind of to you know, besides all those other things that I have to think about with bipolar, it's also to remember that, you know, I want to be living my life and not be living bipolar's life.
Right.
Right.
That's a great way to put it.
Definitely. Well, we've got to take a quick break. So here is David Hernandez with Beautiful.
The stars in the sky and they're starting to align. I see you passing by and we're slowing down the tide. Now my love is flashing by. All I see is flashing lights. Cause you're right here by my side. Can you feel it come alive? If this were a love song, would you be mine? I just can't get you off of my mind. And I think about you all day and night. So I wrote you a love song. Won't you a love song? Baby, you're beautiful. I think you're beautiful.
you're beautiful, so damn incredible, so unforgettable. Yes, I think you're beautiful.
Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe. This is Rebecca sitting next to me, and we have on the line Mr. Erez Shek. How you doing, sir?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I was afraid to screw up your name, so I hope I didn't.
No, you did good.
Cool. It's a paranoia of
me. We both have a little bit of a phobia of names now.
We're gun shy, if you will.
No, I think it's natural. Yeah.
All right. So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
As we joke around here, you have a great sense of humor. Were you always like the class clown type?
I've always been ridiculously funny. Yes. If that's what you're saying. Well, no, it's funny. I do honestly think that I had, in many ways, took on my dad's sense of humor, which is very, he was a very sarcastic man. I can say smart ass, right?
Sure.
I just did.
So. we kind of can't bleep that. So.
Right. He was very silly and just out there and a big smart booty. And and I kind of think I'd like to believe that I kind of took that on early on in life. Comedy, like being funny has always been kind of my go-to in life. And, you know, I grew up doing theater and being trained as an actor. And everyone would always say, well, comedy is like the hardest thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know what you all are talking about. I'd be like, I don't know what's going on with you guys, but I just have to throw myself on the ground and people are laughing. Because like physical comedy was a huge thing for me. I have a huge love for Charlie Chaplin. And Buster Keaton and all those greats who kind of laid down the work for physical comedy and clowning and all those things. So I kind of always felt like if I can make people laugh, it came from a place from wanting to be liked. And then I kind of realized over time that it's a good way to get messages through to people and to kind of break down barriers so people who might not necessarily be listening to what I'm saying could possibly start listening to what I'm saying. Because you're making them laugh, so it kind of opens that door.
Right.
Do you feel like you use your humor as a coping mechanism as well?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I think it's a coping mechanism, but it also helps me with being... I've embraced the idea of being transparent with myself. So while it's a coping mechanism, it's also a way that I let myself face the things I don't necessarily want to face about myself by being open about calling myself out on it. And when I call myself out on it, it's typically in a funny way. It's typically something that I find humorous, and hopefully other people find humorous. Plus it, you know, it's an easier way to face things that you don't necessarily want to face in life.
Yeah.
For me,
yeah, I guess.
I mean, everybody has their own kind of journey and things that work for them. But for me, that's kind of what works for me.
That's awesome that you're self-aware enough to know that that's, you know, something you can go to. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's humor's great. I think half the reason I have the friendships I have is because of stupid things I've said or done that people kind of latched onto, you know.
For sure.
I have a serious question for you, sir.
Okay.
You had a recent suicide attempt.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that at all and what got you to that point?
Yes, let's talk about it.
Okay.
So it was actually almost a year ago in September.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people kind of assume that, you know, it was due to bipolar, or it was from you know, a bipolar episode, or it was a mismanagement of medication, and I wasn't on the right dosage. And when it really came down to it, people who live with bipolar disorder, kind of going along the thought that, you know, I have bipolar disorder, but that doesn't mean, you know, regular emotions that, you know, people who don't live with a mental illness have can't happen. And I had been going through what I guess you would call a situational depression,
okay.
Where I was just depressed, and you know, we did, you know, when my psychiatrist saw that, we did try to you know, alter medications, change dosages, and nothing was really happening. And it's kind of this idea that, like, well, you know, if doing the obvious things of medication isn't working, then there's a root to every surface issue. And in this case, we were dealing with the bipolar, like it was a surface issue by giving it the medication. It's not really surface, but I mean,
right.
But the root issue was, you know, a situational depression, based on kind of where I was in life, and also kind of a lost sense of self, because a lot of the things that I was saying or doing or my actions were being attributed very much to the bipolar, like for years, I realized.
Right.
And by doing that, by the people who, you know, society considers closest to us, I lost my sense of self, and I lost myself. And that's kind of how the depression formed and took shape. I actually have a video up on my website, www.theshackcheck.com, and it's where I talk, I mean, pretty openly about the kind of days leading up to my choice, and once I made my choice, the kind of journey I took, and what happens afterwards. It's called Stigma Kills, and it's on my website.
Okay.
It's a YouTube video.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that. That's,
yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to talk about it. I mean, not just my situation, obviously.
Right.
The fact that there is a difference between our illness and I mean, quote unquote, regular emotions and a situational depression that can happen, and also the effects that stigma or the miseducation, the misinformation, and the discrimination, which is how I describe stigma, can affect those living with mental illness. Besides the fact that we also need to be talking about suicide,
right.
I think that it's an uncomfortable subject. It's not a pretty subject to talk about. It doesn't bring up, you know, fuzzy feelings within us. But the thing is the more we talk about it, the more people out there who are thinking of doing it or thinking of hurting themselves hear that it's okay for us to talk about it, and that we can reach out and talk to people. Because not talking or condemning it, that's not doing anything. That's not preventing them at all.
No, then you're complicit, you know, really.
Exactly.
And. Yeah. You know, there's so many different ways I want to go with this whole conversation. You know, just different things popping in my head as you're talking. But Beck was going to ask this, but I'll ask. How are you doing now? Have you developed more coping mechanisms or skills to get you through the dark days?
Yes, for sure. Number one, I found that, I found after the attempt and after being in the hospital, there was newfound hope in me. But it was also because a key to getting through those dark times is, again, going back to transparency and being honest with yourself and calling yourself out on things, because there are the dark times that we need help getting through. But we also have to realize where our strength is as well and find that strength, because I let other people's ideas of my bipolar and my illness take over my identity. And I believed I was not ARIS, I was bipolar. And when I say I am not bipolar, I am ARIS, I am living with bipolar disorder, I mean it. And when I say that I mean it, it also means that I have to be able to check in with myself and say, okay, and it is, again, it's extra work. You have to check in with yourself and be like, am I attributing this to my disorder, or am I going through something right now that is situational based? And it can be found within us. We just have to be willing to find that different perspective. We just have to be willing to look at a different viewpoint of it. Because I personally can't make my bipolar go away. I went to Harry Potter in Disney World and I got a wand and I was like, nope, bipolar not going away. But what I can change is my perspective and my viewpoint of living with bipolar disorder and having the will to work towards strengthening myself with it, living with it,
Yeah. You know, it's funny, the thing that I was, one of the things that popped in my head a minute ago when you were talking was that, the second someone finds out that you've got a mental illness, you've got bipolar disorder or what have you, they cease to see you as the person and they see you as the illness. And you're stuck sitting there going,
Their perception of the illness.
You know, and you're sitting there going, well, no, I'm still the same person I was. Have this issue now, and it's no different. I'm diabetic and it's no different than me going, well, no, I'm still Joe. I'm just Joe plus diabetes. Right, exactly. Yeah. I've seen so many people do that with Beck, and it really makes me angry because it's like, they'll look and go, well, you guys have been so successful in your marriage and,
how can you tolerate her so long?
Yeah, right. And it's a bunch of crap like that. And it's like, well, no, she's not her illness. She's this beautiful, wonderful woman that I have the grace and the passion and I hit the lottery with her. She's wonderful and I love her with every fiber of my being. And, I'm grateful for the last 16 years, and I'm professing my love to you right now.
Thank you, honey. I appreciate it.
Guys, can you hold one second? That was, super sweet, and I just need to throw up in this bucket over there.
No problem.
I totally knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that.
but it's a viewpoint that I've had the entire 16 years that we've been together is – people would look at her and see her diagnosis and her illness. And I look at her and just see her as this wonderful person that she is. And this is just something that she has to deal with, And so we walk that journey together, and more people, I think, would benefit if they had the same type of viewpoint, where,
right.
I look at you, Eras, and I don't see an illness. I see a really sweet guy, a really nice guy. I treasure the fact that we're friends now, and, you know, look forward to getting to know you a lot better as time goes on. And, you know, it's, your illness is just part of what you deal with on a daily basis, man. That's just how it is, you know, and, you know, that's, I think, part of breaking down the stigma, you know.
Yeah. I agree with you. Number one, thank you. I do think that's like a huge part of breaking down the stigma is people kind of being able to see the difference. It's funny. I have a friend that I've been friends with since high school, and he's one of the ones that has been able to see the difference between, you know, ERAS and bipolar.
Right.
And it's wonderful because it does tend to keep me in check on certain things. But I find oftentimes like there's two ways it can go, right? Either people don't know what mental illness is and they kind of have these ideas of how it's depicted.
Thank you, Hollywood.
Or they use it like in adjective form, like somebody, oh my God, that person was being so bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's like, it's not an adjective. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, Joe, you are being so gout right now. You are so gout. You know, like nobody says that.
Funny,
so why
he actually has gout.
Yeah, that's the funny thing is I actually battle gout too.
Joe. You are not gout. You are Joe. Gout is a part of you.
Thank you for
you know, but like we don't tend to do that with physical illnesses. Yeah.
Right.
Like I was trying to, you know, physical illnesses. That sounded weird to me for some reason.
But
when it comes to a mental illness, it's much easier for us to make fun of it. It's much easier for us to stigmatize it. Exactly. So there's so many different types of stigma that kind of exist out there. And I know like my first video that I did was called I Am Not a Textbook Definition, where it's like people just, you know, read all these books about, you know, bipolar disorder. And then all of a sudden I was every single thing in them, you know, and then I'm like, you know, and I realized after my suicide attempt, I was like, no. I'm not a textbook definition because, like, my chemical imbalance is my chemical imbalance that exists within my brain. Meaning, somebody else living with bipolar disorder, they have their own brain and their own chemical imbalance. No chemical imbalance can be the same. So
right.
The idea of stigmatizing us, like according to textbook or ignorance or whatever you see wherever, it literally makes absolutely no sense. And us living with mental illness, we take it on. That's another thing we have to take on is society's perception of those things.
Exactly.
And that's just an added thing that weighs on us. And I mean, for me, I know personally that it can take you down. And so that's why I don't think everybody needs to take on this responsibility, but I feel a responsibility that it's like, no, we have to get past all those things, and we have to actually teach people, you know,
right.
about these things. And we have to, you know, we have to turn our beautiful and tortured stories of pain, of depression, of anxiety, of bipolar. And we take those short stories or our videos or our blogs, and we need to move them. We need them to become part, those monologues, for them to become part of a dialogue with people.
It's time to set aside the anger and the bitterness of fighting a battle and turn it into education.
Yeah, because the thing is like, yeah, you know, if we're sitting in battle mode, and if we're sitting in anger towards it mode, and yes, it is angering, but if we're sitting in that mode, who's going to actually want to listen to us? Like if a teacher came up to me and was like, I'm going to fight you on chemistry. I'm going to fight chemistry with you. I'd be like, no, I'm good. I don't want to learn any chemistry from someone who's trying to fight me. We need to continue sharing our stories, but we also have to be able to kind of let go of the anger to a place where we're actually having the conversations we need to have so that we can actually stop stigma, you know?
Right. Exactly.
It doesn't come just from yelling at people.
No.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah, you get more flies with honey than you do vinegar.
Right, good point.
Yeah. So
we've got to take our very last commercial break here. This is Alexander Rodriguez, No One Is Alone.
I love this song.
No one here to guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still you're not alone. No one is alone. Truly, no one is alone. Sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood. Others may deceive you. You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no one is alone. People make mistakes. Fathers, mothers, people make mistakes, holding to their own, thinking they're alone. Honor their mistakes, everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right, and giants can be good. You decide what's right, you decide what's good. Just remember, someone is on your side, someone else is not. While you're seeing your side, maybe you forgot that they are not alone.
I can hear you.
No. Look, we need to explain that to our audience. What happens is through the studio, when our producer brings us back in, there's a voice that only we can hear, and it says unmuted. And Joe and I were a little slow on the uptake there, and Erez
was not
slow. He heard the man, and he told him he heard the man. So that's
So that said, welcome back to Voices for Change
2.0. Yeah, welcome back with Eras.
And us. Oh,
that was kind of funny.
That was great. Oh, my ribs hurt.
Yeah, that was really funny because you were so sincere about it too. You're like, I can hear you.
Yeah, and yeah, you're like, it's okay. You're heard and you're loved. We appreciate all that you do.
I hear what you're saying. And
incidentally, we got a message from Scott. It says, Big Brother says, thank you, Eras.
What? Oh,
it says, Big Brother says, thank you, Eras.
You're welcome.
All right, so we got to get
this. I'm here for you.
We appreciate it. We've got to get this question in before the end of the show, or we...
Yeah.
Laugh ourselves off the air. So tell us about the Shek Check, which is spelled, by the way, S-H-E-K, for those of you that are not aware, Shek Check.
Or that you're looking for it.
What is it? Where is it? And why should people be into it?
Well, the Shek Check, I started creating it, this year. The kind of idea came from, originally, you know, The idea of fact-checking things became quite relevant in our world at the time. And I'm just going to leave it there. And and I was like, well, you know, we kind of should be doing that with ourselves as well. You know, not everybody has to check themselves. They can find their own blank check themselves, I guess. But it was created kind of as a way to create awareness of mental health and also self-care and to kind of work towards ending stigma using humor and music. So I use YouTube and I post a lot of videos. I did recently actually go past that brink and wrote something. But a lot of it is, number one, about like kind of... you know, it's about self-awareness and finding self-awareness within ourselves, not only for people outside our community, but for within our community. Because I feel oftentimes, you know, self-care and self-awareness kind of get mixed up in our world because we're so focused on the medication and kind of, you know, trying to just survive through life. And, I just think that, you know, me providing things that have helped me and ideas that have helped me, and then I go into, you know, in further, like, I guess, monologue form in my videos with weird and exciting forms of humor, can maybe give people, help people find a new perspective in looking at things. And that's for us living with a mental illness. And for personal growth, for people who might not be living with mental illness and just want to kind of understand different perspectives of looking at mental health.
Or even those that are caregivers for someone with mental illness, I would assume, too.
For sure.
That's great.
You know, I think just because we live with mental illness does not mean we have to kind of stop our own personal growth in life. And although our illness is a challenge, it doesn't make us immune from like continuing to challenge ourselves for growth.
Yeah, that's something that I'm sort of struggling with now. I'm sort of stuck. You know, I know that I've done quite a bit, you know, as far as my advocacy, but it still feels like I haven't done enough. And I'm sort of stuck in a position right now where I'm pretty consistently in a depressive state and still just beating myself up because I'm not getting enough done. And that's what I'm going to start working towards now is finding out why that is with my doctor. And then, you know, right. I just started talk therapy. So I'm going to start working through some of the grief issues that are weighing me down and yeah. just,
are important things to work through because like they have a strong effect on us. I mean, grief, especially. I lost my yeah. dad almost 6 years ago now. And it weighs down on you because sometimes we don't want to admit it. And sometimes we can admit we're in grief, but we're not at a place yet where we can delve deeper into it because, right. you know, the grief is the, and I use the word surface emotion very, like, I'm not using it lightly, right? But mm-hmm. It's one thing when we can say something and admit it. It's another thing when we go and do stuff about it to get to the root of that issue to actually take care of it. Because surface issues, you know, taking care of a surface issue or a surface feeling doesn't take away the root problem.
Right.
Or
the root emotion that come and all the things that kind of the dirt and the grittiness that is on that root.
Right. You know, my dad just passed this past May.
Yeah.
And my mom passed in 2008. And when my dad passed, it was like it brought forward my mom's death again, all over again.
Yeah. Like flashing back in a way.
Right. And so now I feel like I'm grieving both of them. And I'm at this stage now where I'm just not thinking about either of them. Like, I refuse to let myself even think about something he might have said or something she might have said or even get pictures of them in my head. I block them out because I know that once I open those floodgates that I'm not going to be able to control it. So,
And my viewpoint on that is open those floodgates. Like, the way I look at it. And I know it's hard. And you're like, I know what's going to happen when I do that. But it's like, I've realized like when we don't kind of make ourselves face those things, directly, and there has to be like a finding a kind of balance between compassion for yourself, but also the want to deal with it, because I know I am forever going to be missing my dad, and I am forever, there are things I'm forever going to want to say or do or share with him. And I remember when he first passed, it was floodgates. It was floodgates all the time. And then there was a period where I kind of just like was like, okay, I'm gonna just live with the fact that I'm upset and I'm depressed because he's gone. And then there was a point where I had to say, okay, now I actually have to face that he's gone and see what my next steps are to deal with it. And it's going to suck. It's not going to be like a roller coaster ride, you know? But I have to do it because if I don't do it, it's actually doing more damage to me by not facing it and not opening those gates. For me, that's again, like, you know, everybody is different with their process, but it's kind of like if you hold something inside too much, it's just the explosion is it can be worse and it could have more damaging effects in my life.
Yeah, that's what my fear is. That's why I went ahead and started talk therapy. And so far, I've only gone to, I think, just the one session, but I really liked her and I'm pretty good about, if I walk in there knowing exactly whether or not I like the person or not. So,
finding a good therapist is like, because
it's taken me 25 years to find somebody.
Yeah. Well, no, because like I've been in therapy since I was like in my teens and since I was diagnosed at 21 for bipolar. And I know like I've been through like the coffee talk therapists. That's what I call them. Mm-hmm. They're like the therapist that you sit down and you're basically just sitting there just talking like you're talking to like a friend and it's not really therapy. You're just talking, you're just venting. And I've been through so many therapists, and my psychiatrist now that I'm with now, been with him for 7 years, and he's seen me through a lot. But the one thing, I mean, he is consistent with is he challenges me. He finds that mm-hmm. he finds that combination of compassion, but also that time to call me on my BS. And something he's strong on is he never gives me answers, because I mean, he believes, and I believe, that we have to kind of come up with our own solutions and our answers, because if we're just going to other people's answers, we're just copying off someone else's test.
Right.
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 You know
that,
what I mean?
That makes
sense. So,
yeah,
like,
that makes sense.
Those therapists that, like, that kind of, like, piss you off and say the things you don't want to hear, sometimes those are the ones that, like, I am like, okay, you're one that I need to stick with. Because sometimes we need to hear the things we don't want to hear if we want to challenge ourselves and be honest with ourselves.
Right.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you there. But now we are running out of time, but I did want to ask you to tell our audience where they can find you on social media if they want to reach out to you.
Yes, of course. So on the Twitter sphere, I am at Erez Shek, so that's E-R-E-Z-S-H-E-K. If you want to hit me up on Instagram, that's at The Shek Check. So it's like my website, The, T-H-E, Shek, S-H-E-K-C-H-E-C-K. Oh my God, I just almost had issues spelling check. And that's my website, www.thesheckcheck.com. I think my brain is actually slowly starting to unwork itself at the moment.
Well, you know, you were up early, so, you know, give yourself a little early way there.
A break there.
Yeah, it doesn't get better as you get older. Right? I got news for you.
Oh, no. My brain has been slowly. I turned 36 in June, and
happy birthday.
What?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Happy belated.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Yeah. And I noticed after that there was a slowing down of my brain. Just a tad.
Yeah, you
and
start,
I also started making dad jokes, and I'm not a dad, so I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, that comes with time too. I'm 43 and yeah, I'm starting to have senior moments already, so...
And the dad jokes are just consistent.
Yeah, I do that to her a lot.
It's just, it's awful.
It's painful, but it amuses me, so I'm okay with it.
Glad it amuses somebody.
But you know what, though? Rebecca, when he makes those jokes, that's an opportunity for you to make fun of him for making dad jokes.
Oh, I do.
Oh, she does.
Don't worry.
So you guys are a comedy duo working off of each other. There we go.
We she does and we do, and I'm emotionally scarred from it, but it's okay because it works.
So, there you go.
You know.
16 years, baby.
Yes, your anniversary is next week, correct?
Next Thursday, yeah.
Yep.
Next Thursday. Have a happy anniversary.
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, Joe's taking a couple of days off work, and we're pretty excited about that. So,
yes.
Are you guys going anywhere? Doing anything?
We're going nowhere, and it's going to be as glorious as you can imagine.
That sounds wonderful.
Yep. All right, well, we're going to have to sign off with you for now. Pardon?
Staycations rock.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They do, definitely. We enjoy those, so...
Yep.
But we've really also enjoyed having you on the show. It's been great. We've had a great time.
Nice segue.
Thank you for having me on. I enjoyed
Absolutely. And, you know, if anything new is coming up in the future, please let us know. We'd love to have you back anytime.
Oh, for sure. And you know I will hashtag keep talking MH.
There we go.
Wonderful.
And, you know, we'll be in touch all over the place anyway, so...
Yeah, we're trying to do something like what Saturday Night Live does, where I think they get like a gold jacket if you have a maximum number of visits to our show.
Yep.
We've got a couple of people that have
so far.
So far, two. We just have two, right?
Three.
Whatever, it's two or three.
We'll
have to go back and look.
It's three.
Yeah, so, you know, we love our old-timers to come back and update us on what they've got going on now, so.
And now you're officially an old-timer.
Yep. You're a pro.
And, Joe, you're now on my shit list.
Yay!
Because you called me old.
Then my work here is done.
There we go. Okay, now you're
off. All right, well, thank you once again. Work. Thank you once again for being on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time out. And just if you wouldn't mind staying on the line for a minute, this is John Williams, Wherever You Are.
I love this new caramel macchiato from Tim Hortons.
Me too. Did you know that it's made with fresh ground espresso beans?
Cool. Did you know that they hand layer the smooth espresso on top of freshly steamed milk?
Did you know that I love the sweet caramel?
Oh yeah. Did you know we're holding up the drive-thru?
Oops.
Stop by Tim Hortons today for a new handcrafted caramel macchiato. Available hot or iced. Great quality at a great value. It's all good at Tim Hortons. At participating Tim Hortons restaurants.
Welcome to Tim Hortons.
I'll take a coffee and...
How about a bagel breakfast sandwich? They're just two for $4.
Ah, I like that.
Freshly prepared with savory sausage, fluffy egg, and melted cheese on a freshly baked bagel. Just two for $4.
I like that. I just fist bumped your speaker.
Oh, I just fist bumped you back.
Get two sausage, egg, and cheese breakfast sandwiches on a plain bagel or English muffin for just $4. Or mix and match for $4. Great quality at a great value. It's all good at Tim Hortons. No substitutions or additions. Limited time only at participating restaurants.